The big news to come out of the US today, a panel set up by US President Barack Obama to review the National Security Agency has recommended winding back some of its surveillance powers, as well as possibly the appointment of a civilian to head the organisation. This panel was established in the wake of those spying revelations that came out via Edward Snowden. The panel is recommending that the NSA give up control of its massive US phone records database, as well as change the way it spies on foreign leaders and the way it conducts its cyber warfare. No decision from the president yet. He'll make a decision on all 46 recommendations in the new year. He's about to go on a vacation. He'll be no doubt poring over the recommendations. Joining me now, though, is Sam Roggeveen, who is a former Australian intelligence analyst. He's now the editor of the Lowy Institute's Interpreter International Policy blog, and he joins me now via Skype. Sam, thank you very much for joining us.
G'day, Waleed.
I'll go through some of the specific things in a moment, but in the main, sort of taking a bigger picture of view of this, did Barack Obama need to do this? Has he kind of saddled himself here with a bunch of recommendations that might be awkward for him?
I think he probably needed to do it for his own supporters. A large part of his supporter base is young and very tech savvy, and they feel pretty threatened by some of the things that have been revealed by the Snowden leaks. So from that perspective, he had to keep them happy. I mean, he doesn't face another election, of course, but it's never in even a second-term president's best interest to turn a large part of the supporter base against himself.
Right, well, I can understand the political imperative, but the question then becomes what this means for the state, the United States, and whether or not it actually compromises the way the state operates. Let's look at some of the specifics. Metadata. So the idea here would be, according to the recommendations, that the government wouldn't be allowed to collect and store all this mass non-public personal information about individuals. That would have to go via some kind of private entity, and the government would have to get authorization every time it wanted to access this metadata and make linkages. Do you think that that makes anything difficult or unworkable about government intelligence?
The fact that they now need a private operator or a third party to actually hold that data, that didn't impress me too much. I mean, it seems a distinction without a difference. One of the things that Snowden revealed is just how close the US intelligence community, how closely intertwined it is with various commercial contractors. So I'm not sure that makes much of a difference. The important part is that it seems as if the panel is recommending extra extra checks and court orders in order for the intelligence community to get access to that data.
Right. It's about having it in a place where they have to get approval. That is really the main idea here.
Yeah, indeed.
But I imagine, I mean, look, you're a former intelligence analyst. You can tell us what it's like at the coalface, as it were. Are these sorts of things likely to be delays that compromise security?
Well, I think from what I've read of the report so far, and keep in mind it's over 300 pages, so I haven't read the whole thing, but one of the conclusions they draw is that actually this metadata, they're not too impressed that it's made a huge difference to US counterintelligence efforts.
Right.
So evidently the panel itself feels that the answer to that question is no.
Well, that seems to me a really, really big statement, because it seems in the public discourse there has been in the main an assumption that every intrusion into privacy did have some kind of security payoff. Yeah. Do you think that the terms of the debate might actually shift?
Well, maybe. I mean, even if that's true, it doesn't change the key element of the debate, which is that, and again, this is repeated, this argument is repeated in the report, that security is not simply one thing. Security is not just security from terrorism. Security means a whole bunch of things, including
security from government intrusion.
Exactly right. So there are balances required here, and there needs to be a sort of mature discussion about how much risk people are willing to put up with. I think what this report represents is another check on the assumption since 9/11 that we're not willing to put up with any kind of risk when it comes to terrorism. It's what Dick Cheney used to call the 1% doctrine.
Yeah.
You know, if there's even a 1% chance of something going wrong, then we have to stop it. And I think slowly over time, the Obama administration in particular has said, well, actually, no, that's not really right. It's certainly not 1%. It may not even be 10% or 15%. We've got to be prepared to live with slightly higher risk of terrorist attack if we want to preserve our liberties.
Well, I was going to say that that seems to me the kind of thinking you can do when you haven't had a terrorist attack for a while. But of course, we have. There was one in Boston earlier this year, which it almost seems like it's vanished from our consciousness. It's not in our discourse in the way that previous terrorist attacks used to be. Do you think something fundamental has changed in the way we see security?
Well, I think that people have realised that we overreacted to 9/11, and we overreacted in Australia's case to to 9/11 firstly, and arguably to the Bali bombing as well. Two massive wars were launched on the back of the 9/11 attacks, both disasters to varying degrees. And so I think this is a course correction.
Let's look at the pointy end of this as far as the news is concerned, and that is spying on world leaders. Of course, Australia now very much in the thick of that with our relationship with Indonesia. The recommendation they put forward here is that approval would be needed from the highest levels before spying on world leaders would be possible, and you would have to consider whether the information can be obtained in a different way. That seems to echo very much a view that you've shared, Sam, in a piece, your latest piece on The Interpreter, when you've spoken about the Australia-Indonesia thing. Do you think that ultimately, though, that's a workable solution where you'd have to go to the political side of government in order to get decisions about these sorts of intelligence matters?
On the face of it, I don't think that's a bad step, although I would also argue that I'd be shocked if some of these measures weren't being taken already. I mean, of course, intelligence agencies and governments as a whole would consider whether they can obtain some of this information by other means before they think about, you know, using spying methods. Of course, they would do that already. I think, look, it's a case-by-case thing. You know, when it comes to, if I was South Korea, for instance, and I was thinking about spying on the leaders in North Korea, then that you get no argument from me that that's a valuable thing to do. At the other extreme, the Americans spying on Germany, that seems to me slightly bizarre and unnecessary, and really a job for American diplomats to learn what the German leadership is thinking, not for its spies.
Right, yeah, but from the outside, it seems to me like this was happening more or less as a matter of reflex. It's like, well, we can monitor their phone, so well, why wouldn't we? And then a lot of the commentary when this became something that was reported and then became a scandal was, well, this is all confected because everyone knows you already do all of this anyway. If that analysis is true, it seems this response, this report, the recommendations they're making are quite extraordinary because they're asking the government to step back from what is standard practice.
Well, I'm not sure how standard it is. I mean, obviously, spying is standard, and spying on leaders of foreign countries, yeah, is standard. But whether spying on fellow members of, you know, the closest military alliance in the history of the world, NATO, whether that's standard, I don't know so much.
Right. Yeah, it's a fair point that you make, Sam. Look, it's a pleasure to have the chance to speak to you. I hope to do it again sometime. Thank you very much for your insights.
Great, Waleed. Thank you.
Sam Roggeveen, who is former Australian intelligence analyst, is now the editor of the Lowy Institute's Interpreter, which is an international policy blog. He's speaking to me there via Skype.